Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters in Christ, and welcome, as we always say, to our illustrious, prestigious Little League Senior Citizens Hall in quaint little College Point, Queens, New York. Yeah, all right. We haven't been here since March, early this year. It's been 7 months since we've been here. Because, as you know, we have the May crowning, we have the meeting at our workshop, and then you have Our Lady's 39th anniversary, and then Veronica's anniversary. So typically, we don't usually start our fall meetings until now October, and then next month in November. So a lot has transpired between March and now. Today is the Feast of St. Luke, right? Feast of St. Luke, so we wish you a happy St. Luke's Day. And again, as always, with a lot of these saints and feast days that we celebrate, there's a relationship with Bayside. And for any Bayside scholars, you know that Veronica had a vision at least two times of St. Luke. Anyone remember the date? One date in particular I'm asking because I think you might remember. No? It's May 17th, 1986, and September 7th, 1976. September 7th, 1976, and May 17th, 1986, Veronica had a vision of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And her relationship with the gospel writers go way back, really, right in the very beginning, in the sky. Remember she saw the symbols of each of the gospel writers? And so that... her connection, or the shrine's connection with the gospel writers, go way back, right from the very beginning, if you will. So, and also, too, last weekend, I think it was noteworthy, we'd like to bring this to your attention. I'm sure you follow the news in the Catholic world, but five saints were canonized last week. And, of course, one of them was the foundress of the Little Sisters of the Poor, where Father Skirla resides, here in Queens. Right, she's now Saint Mary of the Cross. Her name was Jean Jougon, and she was a French woman that founded the Little Sisters of the Poor in the, was it 1700s or 1800s? I think it was the 1800s. And her particular charism was to help the elderly and the poor and the abandoned. And to this day, they really do wonderful, wonderful work. Hence their name, Little Sisters of the Poor. And so for you to be a member or a resident of their nursing home or their center, you do have to be poor or destitute. If you are rich or you have funds or monies, they do not accept you. That's exactly what their charism is, that's their identity. Is that they only accept the poor, and the poor and the destitute, and the abandoned. And so Father Skirla has been there now for 3 years now, about 3 years. He really loves it. He really enjoys it there. He's fit in there like a hand in the glove. They love him there. And last week, Bill and Peter went to their little remembrance, mass, and ceremony. We were the lay order of St. Michael was invited by Father Skirla and Sister Mercy. We know the nuns over there pretty well. We usually go to two or three of their functions a year. We join Father Skirla there with the other good nuns, and we have a pretty good relationship with them, especially with Sister Mercy. And so they had a mass that was celebrated by the auxiliary bishop, Cantanello. And afterwards, they had a luncheon and ceremony in honor of their foundress. This is a big day for them, right? And all I could think of is, when is our big day coming for Veronica the Cross? You know, the canonization of Veronica the Cross. Can you picture her right now? She's got a 500x500-foot picture hanging from St. Peter's Square, Veronica, the one in ecstasy, right? The traditional one. But that day is coming. That day is coming. And of course, Jean Jougon wasn't canonized until 150, 200 years later. And sometimes these take time. Even if you're on the fast track, you still have to go through the process, right? But that's a great day. And then the other saint, one of my favorite saints is Saint Damien now, the apostle to the lepers in Hawaii. What a beautiful story. What a tremendous story of faith and inspiration. I love the words of Pope Benedict the 16th at the canonization ceremony, in which he was saying that Father Damien, he went to Hawaii with a lot of fear and loathing. I can imagine. Back then, especially, leprosy, if you had leprosy, that was the equivalent of the Black Plague. That was a death sentence. Period, end of story. When Father Damien accepted this job, in fact, he jumped at it. I read his story. I don't know if anyone has the opportunity, read the story of his life. It's very, very inspiring. And he actually volunteered and jumped at it. But he knew that by accepting this was a death sentence. Eventually, he would come down with leprosy, and he would obviously share kinship with those that he was serving, but he would fall victim to this and die. And that he did. But not before he was there. I think he was there 18 or 20 years. Not before he gave these people tremendous hope and faith and a glorious example for them to imitate. He really revived that community. He built a church or two. He gave them an identity. He showed that he cared for his brothers and sisters. And he also gave them morals, because there was a group there in that community, because they were just cast aside. No one cared about them. They had no self-esteem or self-respect. So immorality was rampant on that island as well. So he gave them a foundation of the faith and just a tremendous, tremendous example.
With the faith and helping the morals and all, he also gave them identity and dignity.
Absolutely.
Because the cottages he was painting, he was making the living circumstances far better than they had known.
Right.
So
And he was an advocate, obviously a tremendous advocate for them. He would go to the officials in Honolulu and Hawaii and say, look, give me some funds. You know, show some compassion for these people. Okay, they're children of God. They're human beings. Come on. So his advocacy, obviously, for his children, for his servants, was commendable and inspiring and heroic. That's really what the bottom line is. His example was heroic, which reminds me of Veronica the Cross. Another heroic example right there was Veronica the Cross and what she did, what she offered up, the abuse and the revilement that she had to experience all of those years in doing this mission from heaven. Well, inspires me every day, the lay order of St. Michael, and I know it has to touch you profoundly as well. Mm-hmm. All of you are veterans of the war here, and you know that Jesus and Mary can take. You have to get your. You'll get your wounds. You're going to get your scars and your wounds. They take you to the edge of the precipice. Sometimes they test you, they challenge you, but so often you do prevail, like that.
Remember, Our Lady says, "Only through struggle will you be successful."
Right.
And that's in everything.
That's right. That's right.
You have to struggle.
I always remember that. That was one of the latest messages.
This morning was a struggle. And I kept saying, only through struggle will you be successful.
Right, right. That's one of the latest. That was one of the latest messages or locutions from Our Lady through Veronica before she passed on. That was like in the 93, 94. Okay, we want to cover this. A lot of people have been calling about the directives because of the swine flu and the hysteria and this great big pandemic and so forth and so on, which, thanks be to God, has not broken. We're not at that stage, far from it, thanks be to God. But the point that I want to address right now is, because of this threat, a lot of the diocese are issuing directives, and specifically that, let's talk about Brooklyn. Let's talk about the Brooklyn directive here. And we'll kind of use that as a base. Bishop DiMaggio issued a directive that there won't be any more drinking from the chalice. So there won't be any more receiving under both species, okay? Specifically, the drinking of the chalice. And the concern was that you would not be able to receive communion on the tongue. Now, what he did, what Bishop Damasio said in his directive, and let's read it. He says, the bishop has also instructed pastors to encourage communicants to receive the Blessed Sacrament in the hand. So he's encouraged them to receive, the communicants to receive the Blessed Sacrament in the hand. But he never forbade communion in the tongue. And as further proof of that, in the latest issue of the tablet, he says right here, he's enlarging on his directives here, and he says, quote, in no way are we denying the right for people to receive communion on the tongue. He says it right here. No one. And basically, I don't care what diocese you're from, there's no way that a bishop or an authority can forbid you to receive communion on the tongue. There are some priests that will seize this opportunity and say, ha-ha, and they're going to forbid it. No, you can't receive communion on the tongue anymore, only in the hand. That's my directive in my parish. There's no drinking from the chalice, but also there's no receiving communion on the tongue, only in the hand. Well, that's an abuse of their authority. They do not have the authority to do that. And I think any good pastor should realize that they have to respect the consciences of the faithful, of the individual Catholics, who, when the reception of Holy Communion is very near and dear and precious to people, you just don't indiscriminately and thoughtlessly issue a directive without the regard for someone's conscience or their faith in the true presence. Many people, like myself, have never, ever received communion in the hand, or for that matter, virtually all of my life. I've only received from a priest on the tongue kneeling my whole life. And there's a lot of people like that. You can't just indiscriminately say, okay, no, you can only receive. The point is that no bishop or priest or pastor can forbid you from following your conscience. And as we have said a million times, and this is really the clincher if you're approached by your pastor or someone who's challenging you, that it would be a violation of your conscience to receive communion in the hand. You can only receive it on the tongue. And you can cite the reasons why, which you already know. But they have no authority again. So let's make that straight. Make that very, very clear. Well, with this, of course, there has been some kind of positive effects with these new directives of the swine flu. For that reason, holding hands during the Our Father. They've said during the sign of peace not to shake the sign of the peace if you have a cold or the flu or a runny nose. And obviously, drinking from the chalice, we were certainly not supportive of that, I think for obvious reasons. It's not necessary. Even as Bishop Damasio says right here in the column, right in his own column, where the body is, the blood is. So when you receive the body on your tongue from a priest, you're receiving the blood of Christ. It's not necessary to receive the blood. And all it does is it opens itself up to abuse and sacrilege and spillage on the carpet. There's really nothing positive or constructive about it. Now, if we had a whole room full of priests, they'd be all over me. But it really plays into this meal bit. While you eat, now you have to drink. See, and that's why they really push this drinking from the chalice. This is a post-Vatican II innovation. This is an indult. I believe this is actually an indult, which means it's not the norm in your parish, but the United States bishop, an indult is special permission. They got special permission from the Vatican to do this drinking from the chalice. And this has only been, what is it, maybe 1990? Maybe 15, 18 years, approximately? I don't even know if it's that they officially, a lot of them were abusing it anyways. They were doing it. But then, like anything in this post-Vatican era, they do these abuses, And then they turn to the Vatican and say, well, gee, everyone's doing it. You might as well just legitimize it or legalize it. And they do so often, like communion in the hand, like drinking from the chalice, like altar girls. But let's make that very clear. So, and for anyone who may be listening, we want to stress that there's no way that they can forbid you from receiving communion on the tongue.
I know it says in the Vatican II documents also something about an apostolate of the conscience. So even using that about the conscience is a very powerful thing to say.
It is.
You know, because they would know that.
Right.
Recognize that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, the Vatican II document absolutely talks about the primacy of one's conscience and that it's sacred and it's holy and it has to be respected if it's informed. They do. That's the caveat. And that is important because how many people say, well, my conscience says that artificial birth control is okay. My conscience says that I can do this type of sin or that. Well, that's not informed. Our conscience is informed. Therefore, we can defend it and justify it. If a pastor does forbid it, and we've already gotten calls from a couple of parishes in Brooklyn, and I'm sure throughout the U.S. we'll be getting that Astoria, and then in Brooklyn, of pastors that they take advantage, they exploit this situation, and they make their own rules. No communion in the tongue. Well, usually I maintain that 9 times out of 10, you just keep doing what you're doing. Most of the time, a priest does not want an issue. They don't want a problem. You show your courage. You just keep doing what you're doing. 9 times out of 10, they're not going to challenge you. They just don't want the problem. They don't want the issue. They don't want to be reported to in the chancellor. It's a mess. And if they're smart, they don't make an issue, especially they have no grounds to do it. So just keep doing what you're doing. Now, is there that one time that will happen? Yes, there will. They will. So then just go through the channels. Start with the pastor, say, hey, I'm doing this, period, end of story. If he's not cooperative, go to the chancellor, and then go to Rome. Now, we had a fellow, Joe Britton, in San Francisco, who really went to bat on this issue last spring. There was a cluster of parishes in his area that were not budging. They just simply were not budging. And he spoke to them, and then he wrote a letter to the chancery. They were playing house with him for a while. He called them up. He wrote them. They weren't answering. I think he finally called them up. But I think the upshot of it is he did prevail. But boy, it was a battle. It was a battle. It was a struggle. And I think, did he end up going to Rome? Did he have... He didn't have to. They finally relented. They would not give him communion on the tongue. Only communion. Yes. Yeah, in the spring. Right. Right. It's the same thing. Yeah. They were only issuing communion in the hand, and they would not give it to him on the tongue. And so, but he battled them. God bless him. He battled them. Took him on, and I think eventually he prevailed. It didn't happen overnight. It took a few weeks, but he did prevail. You just keep doing what you're doing. Most priests, they're going to give it to you. But be prepared. There might be that one time that they might approach you, and that's why we're talking about the conscience, that it's your conscience, it's your right. Like we've talked about before, it's your divine right, ecclesiastical right. They can't forbid it.
We're not going to take it no matter what in the end anyway.
Right.
Never.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to, I think that she was, think of it this way. Throughout all the centuries of the church, through any plague, through anything, this was never done.
Right.
And even in France in 1858, they had a tremendous knowledge of bacteria, everything. They had a tremendous knowledge of it. Microscopy, those microscopic work, they were very advanced, but it never came to that. In other words, our Lord's in the host, don't worry.
Right.
He'll take care of you.
Yeah.
If this is the worst thing in your life, that if someone else is telling you how to receive Jesus, if it's not total reverence and total love, can't be done.
Right.
And we've just got to kneel, and we'll receive on the tongue from a duly ordained priest, period.
Right.
That's it.
Interesting, good point. That's a good point, John, too, that when you think of the French, you think of what? Louis Pasteur.
Yeah.
Right? Invented pasteurization. I always like that story. You hear that story? This is a true story. Anyone hear about Louis Pasteur? Famous scientist in France? Yeah, isn't that? Yeah, he was on a train. Did you guys hear that? Yeah, the famous French scientist Louis Pasteur, the inventor of the pasteurization process, brilliant man, PhD, the whole nine yards, and he's on the train praying the rosary. And some guy, well-dressed guy, he sits down and he sees this guy praying the rosary. He says, "What's this, praying the rosary? Isn't that superstition? Isn't that for simple peasant, for town folk, and you're praying the rosary? Who are you? What are you?" "Well, my name's Louis Pasteur." "Okay, I'm a doctor." "Okay." It's a true story. True story.
And a guy felt a big lump of humble pie going right down his throat.
Okay, let's talk about the Antichrist. Has anyone ever heard of this cardinal? This was brought to our attention recently. And this, I'm just flabbergasted. This is like a bombshell here. A Giacomo Cardinal Biffi from Bologna, Italy. He's been speaking about the Antichrist for years. And in fact, the London Times, the Times of London, reported in 2004 that the Cardinal described the Antichrist as, quote, "walking amongst us." Now, it's interesting, he's a very intelligent man. I'll give you a background on him a little bit. But he has been preaching about the Antichrist for years, and he's going from a different angle, if you will. I guess you'd say from an intellectual angle, but nonetheless, he's backing up what Our Lady of the Roses has been saying since 1970. And it's good to see a high-ranking churchman do that. I don't know of anyone that has ever spoken to that extent about the Antichrist like this Cardinal Biffi from Bologna. And how many cardinals do you know speak about the Antichrist walking amongst us? And he was chosen to show you what's so interesting too, is he was chosen by Pope Benedict XVI to lead the annual Lenten retreat in 2007, just 2 years ago. And he has a reputation in the secular and ecclesiastical world for preaching about the Antichrist, but Pope Benedict XVI selected him to lead the annual Lenten retreat. That's a very prestigious position. You get noticed. And it also gives an indication to the world and the church where the Pope is coming from. And so it certainly raised a lot of eyebrows when he led this retreat. And some of the things, and he didn't disappoint. He did not disappoint. He bases his view on the Antichrist, a lot of it is based on the works of Vladimir Soloviev. He's a famous Russian theologian and philosopher, who, by the way, has received praise from Pope Benedict XVI before his elevation as the Pope. But quoting Soloviev, Cardinal Biffi says, quote, "The Antichrist presents himself as pacifist, ecologist, and ecumenist," end of quote. And then he continues, quote, "He will convoke an ecumenical council," Our Lady speaks about Vatican III, "and will seek the consensus of all the Christian confessions, granting something to each one. The masses will follow him, with the exception of small groups of Catholics, Orthodox, and Protestants," he said, according to a Zenit translation of a Vatican radio summary.
How does he know that?
This is his view. This is his view. In his Tale of the Antichrist, Soloviev foresees that a small group of Catholics, Orthodox, and Protestants will resist and will say to the Antichrist, quote, "You give us everything except what interests us, Jesus Christ." For Cardinal Biffi, this narrative is a warning. quote, "Today, in fact, we run the risk of having a Christianity which puts aside Jesus with his cross and resurrection." The cardinal added that if Christians, quote, "limited themselves to speaking of shared values, they would be more accepted on television programs and in social groups. But in this way, they will have renounced Jesus, the overwhelming reality of the resurrection." The cardinal says, quote, "The danger that Christians face in our days, the Son of God cannot be reduced to a series of good projects sanctioned by the prevailing worldly mentality." End of quote. Would you like to have this cardinal leading your diocese?
Yes.
Pretty good, huh? I know, I hope some of this isn't too intellectual, but it's interesting. The preacher of the spiritual exercises added that, quote, "there are relative values such as solidarity, love of peace, and respect for nature. If these become absolute, uprooting or even opposing the proclamation of the event of salvation, then these values become an instigation to idolatry and obstacles on the way of salvation." End of quote. Are you following that? He continues, Cardinal Biffy, quote, "If Christianity, on opening itself to the world and dialoguing with all, dilutes the salvific event," salvific, salvation, "it closes itself to a personal relationship with Jesus and places itself on the side of the Antichrist." End of quote. Cardinal Biffy goes on, "in the figure of the Antichrist as described by Soloviev." Now, again, he bases his view on the great Russian philosopher Soloviev, who wrote a book in the late 1800s on this. And so he has taken this and sees and is in applying it today and is enlarging on it. That's where Cardinal Biffy's coming from. And Biffy, quote, "sees the emblem of the confused and ambiguous religious identity of the times we are living in now. He sees the singling out and criticism of principled Christianity, an emphasis on openness, obsession with dialogue at all costs, in which there seems to remain little of the unique and incomparable person of the Son of God, who was crucified for us, rose from the dead, and is now alive." And he goes on. I mean, there's a lot of things that he adds. In fact, here's one news release on Cardinal Biffy. Cardinal Giacomo Biffy of Bologna, Italy, says it's impossible to spot the Antichrist because he fools us with his charm and fascinating personality. "The devil is already on earth." Now, he's speaking in the year 2000. Okay. "The devil is already on earth and in the public eye, according to a top Catholic churchman, Cardinal Giacomo Biffy of Bologna, Italy, says it's impossible to spot the Antichrist because he fools us with his charm and fascinating personality. He says the sly old devil guards his identity further by caring for the environment and giving cash to good causes." Go get him, Cardinal Biffy. He is now 81 years old. In fact, I'm going to give a little background on that, Bill. Yes.
Sounds like Gorbachev, because he's ahead of that
green. Oh, yeah. Good point. Yeah. Hey, could be. We all know what Our Lady said about Gorby. I mean, we could read. There's a shortage of time here, and you're probably getting tired of hearing me here. But
no, we're getting out of purgatory.
Thank you, John. Okay. Anyways, okay. You get an idea of Cardinal Biffy. Little backgrounder. He was ordained in 1950. He's been a cardinal since 1985. He was the Archbishop of Bologna from 1984 to 2003. He's retired now. So hence probably has a little bit more liberty to speak freely. Although he was speaking like this when he was the Archbishop of Bologna too. How come, did you guys hear about it before? No one tells me anything. You know, you did hear about it. I never heard about that until recently. I mean, it's only from 2007 that he gave that retreat. But he wrote the book. He is a theologian. He's a scholar of St. Ambrose. He's an author, a brilliant man, a very, very brilliant man, an intellectual. One of the books that he wrote was Pinocchio, Peponi, The Antichrist, and Other Meanderings. And he's written other things as well. But for him to be the Lenten retreat leader, as I mentioned earlier, very prestigious position. John Paul II and Pope Benedict XVI also held that same honor as the annual Lenten retreat leader. And so, well, now he's too old because he's 80, 81 years old now, but he's a year or two younger than the Pope. He's still going strong. He has a brilliant mind.
Just a couple of other notes. The Archbishop of Bologna has outlawed communion in the hand right now.
Is that right?
Which I think is very interesting. And also from
his successor.
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow, that's interesting.
In that
yeah.
Area.
Right.
And Pope Scott Daniel said that that's where St. Dominic is buried.
Oh, were they Archdiocese of Bologna?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So another interesting little coincidence.
It is.
The rosary and
interesting. Absolutely. But Cardinal Biffy, when Cardinal Biffy was a little boy and his friends were in a hurry, they would call to him and say, could you get over here in a jiffy, Biffy? Okay, all right. I won't do any more. All right, that's enough. Okay. Let's tie in Bayside. What Cardinal Biffy is saying is just backing up what Our Lady of the Roses has said at Bayside, that the Antichrist is present, is alive and well, and a terrible presence on earth today, and a terrible force. And let's define what Antichrist is. Another review. We've spoken about it many times here. But Our Lady defines the Antichrist as 666. Lucifer and five major demons from hell with their cohorts or minions that are loosed upon earth doing their dastardly work. That's the first six. The second six is the 6 days of suffering. World War III and the Ball of Redemption. 6 days of suffering. And the third six represent the six who will be punished and rechained by who? Who's going to rechain them?
St. Michael, yeah.
Okay, Lucifer and the five major demons will be rechained. And that the forces of Antichrist are doing their dastardly deeds in the world today and in the church, sad to say. This is the message of Our Lady. We could go on and on with this. The third secret of Fatima. Satan would enter the highest realms of the hierarchy in Rome. Pope Paul VI, that from some fissure the smoke of Satan entered it. June 29th, 1972. When he said that on the anniversary of his coronation, from some fissure, the smoke of Satan has entered into the temple of God. And so this is the principle, one of the primary themes of the Bayside message. And therefore, that's why we need our sacramentals. We have to pray our rosary. And that's why we are in the terrible mess that we are in today. Because they have free reign. And here's the rub with all this. And we mentioned St. Michael, he's going to rechain the evil one. That's one of the major problems in the church today. That your patron and mine, St. Michael, for St. Michael's World Apostolate, for the Order of St. Michael, for the Lay Order of St. Michael, he has, as Our Lady said, he's been rejected. He's been cast out. And so the Antichrist literally has free reign. The inmates are in charge of the prison, literally right now. And if we can just get St. Michael into the church, That would be a tremendous victory for the church, and so many of these devils would flee. They would not be as empowered as they are now because of sin and darkness, and primarily because St. Michael is absent. And so let's go to Holy Scripture. Let's go to the message. 2 Thessalonians 2, it speaks about someone holding back the evil one or the restraining force. Well, who's the restrainer? St. Michael. He's been cast out. During the Vatican II, Council, they eliminated one of their brainstorms was to eliminate the prayers after Mass. They suppressed the Leonine prayers, and therefore the prayer to St. Michael that was said every day in unison by millions of Catholics throughout the world, a powerful force. Just the prayer itself. What did Our Lady call this prayer? How do we identify or define this prayer? What is it? Right, John. It's an exorcism. Exactly. It's an exorcism. So when you say this, when millions are saying it daily, and then you multiply that weekly and then monthly, that's a powerful force against Lucifer and the five major demons. Let's do some math here, but let me read the message first. But figure out these numbers in your head because it's quite interesting. Our Lady said on November 1st, 1977, quote, "Satan, not the lesser demons of hell, but Satan himself now walks your earth. Earth year of 1940 was his beginning, 1940, okay, Lucifer. And then Jesus says in Conversations with Jesus through Veronica, he, the Antichrist, began his reign at 24. He is now 31. He is roaming now, beware, beware. He told Veronica this in 1971. But he, Antichrist, began his reign at 24. So let's do some math. 1940 and 1964. What happened in 1964? What we're just talking about. They eliminated the St. Michael prayer. In 1964, by a decree of the Constitution, let's get the fancy name here. The Constitution of the Sacred Liturgy on September 26, 1964, that's when they decreed that the St. Michael prayer would be eliminated. Now, I think the effect was Lent of 65, but I think the point's well made. The damage was done. As soon as the high churchmen decreed that St. Michael's out in 1964. So 1940 to 1964 is 24 years. Our Lord says that the reign of Antichrist started at the age of 24. Makes sense, doesn't it? It began when St. Michael was thrown out. That's certainly one way of looking at it. I'm not saying it's the exclusive reason, but it's certainly a primary angle here. That's one of the reasons why his reign began at 24. Because our patron was cast out. And so we desperately need to get St. Michael back into the picture. And that's what we're trying to do, little by little and bit by bit. Everything that you can do. That's why these Tridentine Masses, you get the St. Michael. The low Mass, every time you say the low Mass, the Leonine prayers are being said. So that's very important. And so we could go on and on with the Antichrist, and oh my God, the good Lord has given us reams of messages on 666, the Antichrist. We don't have the time. We want to show you some nice pictures. And I'm giving you enough purgatory time as it is, right, John? Okay, Harry, let me just finish my thought and I'll be with you, okay? I just want to finish our thought on, we're not finished with Cardinal Biffy. I have to do one more thought on Cardinal Biffy because you'll appreciate this too, that although Cardinal Biffy is retired, let's face it, he's a cardinal, he's a high-ranking churchman, he just led the papal retreat, a Lenten retreat, he still has pen and pulpit, and he's doing that. His latest book, last fall, called Sheep and Shepherds, Cardinal Biffy notes that the biblical condemnation of homosexuality is explicit and Christians are not, quote, allowed, if we wanted to be faithful to the word of God, and the pusillanimity of passing over it in silence out of concern of appearing politically incorrect. Any scholars out here? What does a pusillanimity mean?
Small-minded.
Pardon?
Small-minded.
Small-minded and
cowardly.
Good, John. Yeah. Same. Yeah. Cowardly. Exactly. The Cardinal's book is replete with references to the sacred scriptures with which he makes his case that the societal acceptance of and spread of homosexuality is both, quote, the proof and the result of the exclusion of God from the collective attention and social life and of the refusal to give him due praise. End of quote. And then he goes on to say, the exclusion of the Creator leads to complete derailment of reason. And then he quotes Scripture. For instance, Romans 1, they became vain in their reasoning and their senseless minds were darkened. While claiming to be wise, they became fools. And he quotes other scripture passages as well. But it's good to see a high-ranking churchman speaking so explicitly and bluntly about a major moral issue of our time. How often do you see a bishop and a cardinal doing that? And so Cardinal Biffy is quite impressive here. I don't know why we hadn't heard about him before, although he made a big splash when he spoke. You can imagine the secular news media when he was the Lenten retreat master and he spoke about the Antichrist, because he was splashed all over it, all over the world. The secular media took up on it as well. But is anyone going to Bologna? Anyone going to Rome or Bologna? Because get Biffy the Bayside message in a jiffy. Really? We need to get him the message on the Antichrist. Get him the Bayside message. Does he know about it? Has he heard about it?
Well, let's go there.
He could be ripe. Dahlia, you got a plan? But we got to get him the message. And anyone who hears this, let's mail it to them. And maybe someone who's going there, someone who's visiting relatives in Italy, in Rome, Bologna, Assisi, Mount Gargano, where St. Michael appeared. I like the one journalist says that Hollywood has Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Bologna has Biffy, the bane of ecclesial novelties. I love that one. That's a good one. Yes.
Michael, Our Lady said that Satan would sit in at the Vatican
Council.
Yes. But if Vatican III, Antichrist is convoking it,
right,
it'll get to that point.
Right. Right.
His power will be consolidated to that point.
It's interesting, according to one source that I was reading, I don't know if anyone has read this before, but when Pope Benedict XVI was the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the CDF, that Cardinal Carlos Martini from Milan, extreme liberal. If you know your churchmen, you all know that he was really a bad cardinal, very, very liberal. He was begging for a Vatican III council. And Pope Benedict said, no way. He was very clear when he was ahead of CDF, no way, no how. And because he knows. He knows what that's, he knows.
How old is the cardinal?
He's about, I think, 81 now. Cardinal Biffy?
No, Martini.
Oh, Martini. He is, he's retired now. Yeah, he's about 80. And it's interesting, too, we talked about the Antichrist, and although Our Lady has emphasized the general term, you and I know that there will be an Antichrist. There will be despot number two. Remember, what was that message? Bayside Scholars? Remember Our Lady said, I call him number two? What message was that? October 6, 1992, we're talking about that one world religion, one world government ruler, despot number two. Despot number one is presumably the AC Pope, the man of dark secrets. So it will come eventually to that one or two persons, but Our Lady is saying, you can see why Our Lady is saying, don't get hung up on it, because the fact of the matter is, we've been in the presence of Antichrist since 1970, really. Remember Our Lady said, Demon 1 was released in 1940. Demon 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 were released from 71 to 76, if my memory serves. Demon 6 was the last of the major demons were released in 1976. Or was it 77? I think 76, I believe. 1976, when the completion of that evil force was again completed. So it's happening right now. They're doing their work now. We don't have that, thank God, the AC Pope, and we don't have the AC One World Ruler. Not yet. It will come to that. Now, some people have said that Pope Benedict could be the glory of the olives, and now we're ready to go on the fast track, that he will be the Pope of flee. We all thought it was going to be Pope Paul VI. Then we thought it was going to be John Paul I. Then we thought it was going to be John Paul II. I mean, when are we going to learn that you can't figure out the good Lord?
What I was asking is, for the consensus of opinion, if there was a divergence of fact regarding the number of popes that remain, or if there was a difference in the proclamation by canonized saints, or those who had the visions and made the statements in Catholic prophecy. You follow me?
Yes.
What are the potentialities here? That's what I'm asking.
Right. Well, I guess with the Garibandel, if you follow strictly Garibandel, that's not going to work, is it?
No.
That's not going to work.
No.
But I think, St. Malachi, I thought there was a different interpretation
still,
for that.
This is still right on the money. If you, like John just said, if you take the glory of the olives as Pope Benedict, then there's only one more true pope after him, and the Antichrist could come in between.
But remember,
come in between,
because he's not a true pope. That's he doesn't count as a pope.
No. John, remember too, interesting too, remember the 1978 message, we had it in the headline, the next one shall be he.
Yes.
Remember? And we were like, oh God, so John Paul I?
But the power of prayer. That was the imposter pope,
that they were talking about.
No. Remember, Pope Paul VI, he died August 6, 1978, Pope Paul VI.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember the headline we had of the 1978 roses? We said, pray for this conclave, and that the next one, that there will be the Antichrist of history. The next one shall be he. Conditional. It's absolutely conditional. That is a perfect demonstration, illustration of the conditionality of the message. And you could give numerous other examples,
too. That's true, a lot of people that threw them for a loop.
Right. And that gives us hope. We don't want this to happen. You want a man of dark secrets on the Pope? If you think you have problems now in your parish, just put your head on the block. Might as well just put your head on the block. In some Cardinal Biffy, let's pray for him, let's get him the message, and let's see if he'll be our lead speaker for the 40th anniversary banquet. What do you think? I already got a headline. We'll do a story on Cardinal Biffy. I already got the headline. Biffy backs Bayside.
What do you think?
Biffy backs Bayside.
No, how about the other one? Martini band in a Biffy.
That's a good one, John.
It's good to know that. You have to put that in your arsenal. You're talking about the devil, the Antichrist, Lucifer, Cardinal Biffy, high-ranking churchman. He's speaking our language. He's backing up what Our Lady of the Roses has said. So put that in your arsenal. Okay. Daryl, would you step up? He's just going to do a brief little explanation on the year of the priests, getting the indulgence. This is a great grace, and make sure you take advantage of it.
Yes, as we all know, this year is the year of the priest, and it goes from June 19th of this year to June 19th of 2010. And of course, in past years, popes have declared, recently where popes have declared certain years for, gotten certain time period for a special cause, like the year of the rosary we had, and we had the year of the Eucharist, year of St. Paul. And like I said, this year is the year of the priest. And for all of these special occasions, these special years, the Pope will give a plenary indulgence for meeting certain conditions. I'll read to you how you can get this plenary indulgence. This is pretty short, so, and with a lot of good information. So this is from the Vatican website, And this is written by Cardinal James Francis Stafford. As has been announced, the Holy Father, Benedict XVI, has decided to establish a special year for priests on the occasion of the 150th anniversary of the death of St. John Mary Vianney, the Holy Curie of Ars, a shining model of a pastor totally dedicated to the service of the people of God. During the year for priests, which will begin on June 19, 2009, and will end on June 19, 2010, the gift of special indulgences is granted as described in the decree of the Apostolic Penitentiary published on the 12th of May. Shortly the day will come on which will be commemorated the 150th anniversary of the pious departure to heaven of St. John Mary Vianney, the Curie of Ars. This saint was a wonderful model here on earth and of a true pastor at the service of Christ's flock. Since his example is used to encourage the faithful, and especially priests, to imitate his virtues, the Supreme Pontiff Benedict XVI has established that for this occasion, a special year for priests will be celebrated from June 19, 09 to June 19, 2010, in which all priests may be increasingly strengthened in fidelity to Christ with devout meditation, spiritual exercises, and other appropriate actions. This holy period will begin with the solemnity of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, a day of priestly sanctification on which the Supreme Pontiff will celebrate Vespers in the presence of the holy relics of St. John Mary Vianney, brought to Rome by the Bishop of Belliars, France. The gift of sacred indulgences, which the Apostolic Penitentiary, with this decree issued in conformity with the wishes of the August Pontiff, graciously grants during the year for priests, will be of great help in achieving the desired purpose in the best possible way. And here's how we can get the plenary indulgence for the year of the priest. The plenary indulgence is granted to all the faithful who are truly repentant, who, in church or in chapel, devoutly attend the divine sacrifice of the Mass and offer prayers to Jesus Christ, the eternal high priest, for the priests of the church and any other good work which they have done on that day, so that he may sanctify them and form them in accordance with his heart, as long as they have made expiation for their sins through sacramental confession and prayed in accordance with the Supreme Pontiff's intentions, on the days in which the year for priest begins and ends, on the day of the 150th anniversary of the pious passing of St. John Marie Vianney, on the first Thursdays of the month, or on any other day established by the local ordinaries for the benefit of the faithful. The plenary indulgence will likewise be granted to the elderly, the sick, and all those for any legitimate reason are confined to their homes, who, with a mind detached from any sin and with the intention of fulfilling as soon as possible the three usual conditions at home or wherever their impediment detains them, provided that on the above mentioned days they recite prayers for the sanctification of priests and confidently offer the illnesses and hardships of their lives to God through Mary, Queen of Apostles. Lastly, partial indulgence is granted to all the faithful every time they devoutly recite five Our Fathers, Hail Marys, and Glorias, or another expressly approved prayer in honor of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, to obtain that priests be preserved in purity and holiness of life. This decree is valid for the entire duration of the year for priests, anything to the contrary notwithstanding. So just a quick summary, the steps for to receive the plenary indulgence would be to on these days, on the first and last days of the year for priests, on the 150th anniversary of the death of St. John Vianney, which would be August 4th, so that's already passed, and on the first Thursdays of the month. Does anyone know why it would be the first Thursdays of the month? When was the when was the priesthood established? Holy Thursday. That's why it would be one on the first Thursdays of, it could be on the first Thursdays of the month, or any other day established by your local ordinary. So basically, the conditions would be to attend Mass, receive the sacrament of penance, to pray for your priests, and to pray for the intentions of the Holy Father. So if you remember to do that in this special year.
Yeah, that's important. Wow. And of course, there's no reason if there's a vigil. Say it's the first. Do we have a vigil coming up on the first Thursday? It's certainly that would constitute one of the requirements if you were praying for the priests at a vigil on Thursday. It's too bad that the Sunday holy hour. See, that's a case where it probably would apply, but you probably would need a special permission from the bishop. You would need probably the permission from the bishop for it to apply, except if the bishop said on this particular Sunday that we're going to give a plenary indulgence. If you meet all the requirements and you're at the Sunday holy hour for priests, you're praying for priests. That certainly would fit. There's no reason why that wouldn't fit. But with that being said, the Sunday holy hour for priests is a beautiful opportunity to remember our priests, as you know, during this special year of the priests. And to spread the word. A lot of people are moved by that. That gives them a little extra motivation to attend a holy hour. They might be tired, or the weather might not be the best, whatever the case might be. Say, you know what? This is the year of the priest. You know, let's make that extra sacrifice for Father Jones, for Pastor Smith, for Bishop Arthur, or whatever their name might be. While we get prepared here, Brian is going to go around with the basket. So we appreciate your donation for the coverage of the hall. Did you enjoy those pictures?
Yeah.
Miraculous picture. Inspiring, right?
Yeah.
Inspiring.
Yes, very nice.
Really, the handiwork of God. It really shows the presence of the good Father in heaven.
Are we the only apparition that gets the miraculous photos on the ground? I don't know of any other apparition that was given this great grace by the Eternal Father to get miraculous photos. And the reason why we get them is because we're an unbelieving generation.
We've seen them, yeah. There has been some isolated examples, and you do see, you have seen some miraculous photographs to some degree, but nothing matches the scope and the breadth of Bayside. Wow. Not even close.
Right.
Not even close. Right, right. So, okay, John is... We're going to close our meeting with a couple of interesting, inspiring testimonials.
We're going to talk about the passing of my father and also of Marion Morris, the organizer's husband in Connecticut. I'll start with Marion. And what we're going to do is, I have funeral cards here from my father and Marion's husband, which you can pass out. It has a traditional prayers on the back, so you definitely should pray these, look at these prayers. Can you pass one out, pass them around? And Marion Morris is the organizer of Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut. She's been involved with the mission for over 30 years. Easily. She's the lady that helps the Sacramental area. And when you go to Sacramento, you'll see her right there helping you out. But Marion's husband... when they got married, he went to Mass a few times for maybe 4 years after they got married. They were married for over 50 years, I believe. And then he stopped going about 4 years after they got married. And he never went back to church, except one time when their daughter got married. And that was it. So he received Marion through her prayers, coming to the grounds, always praying for her husband's salvation. I asked her on the phone yesterday, I asked her, if there's anything you want me to tell the people, what would it be? And she said, tell them there's always hope, no matter how bad it looks, and he was saved. He died with the sacraments, he had the scapular on, he agreed to all this himself, just shortly before he died. And it's a miracle through Our Lady of the Roses. And also, she says she wants to give credit also to Padre Pio, because she specifically prayed to Our Lady of the Roses, but also Padre Pio, for his intercession in saving her husband. He died on Padre Pio's feast day. So she takes this as a sign of his salvation. And she said, let them know, if there's anything I could say, my husband was saved. And briefly, her husband had been losing weight, and they didn't know why. They thought it might be pancreatic cancer. They opened it up, and sure enough, it was. They could not operate, and he never went home from the hospital after that point. He stayed 3 months in the hospital, infection after infection, sickness after sickness. And during this time, he received the sacraments. He willingly accepted the sacraments from the priest. He got invested in the brown scapula. He went to confession, received communion a few times, and then he died on Padre Pio's feast day. And then Marian's really grateful to Our Lady of the Roses for saving her husband and also Padre Pio. Now, my father is almost like a twin story here. 46 years of marriage with my mother. He was not really a religious person growing up, I guess. And then he didn't go to Mass. I remember him briefly a few times when I was young going to church, but then he stopped. And so in his way, he was good in one way, but he wasn't religious. So that was my prayer that he would be saved also through Our Lady of the Roses, his intercession. And a miracle took place. He would never wear the scapula. He never prayed the rosary. He had the story how he got sick was he was involved with chorus singing, with barbershop chorus. He was in a restaurant. He fell down the steps. He hit his head on the wall when he hit the floor. He dislocated his shoulder. He went to an operation on his shoulder to get it relocated. And during this time, during this ordeal, when he hit his head, the brain cancer was woken up. And my sister had a dog next door, was a pointer. And you know those pointers, they see the bird, they point with their nose and their tail. Well, he came over, he would come over the hall and come into my dad's house, and he would go on the couch and he would point to my dad's head. He would put his nose right on my dad's head and point, and no one knew why he was pointing, but he recognized the cancer was there. We didn't know at the time. So what happened was he was diagnosed with brain cancer. He went through the first operation in October of last year. He came out of it okay. He got shingles right after that, which prevented him from taking the chemo. So the cancer grew back. It was the most aggressive form of brain cancer you have. The same thing with Ted Kennedy had when he died. So he had to go back in for a second operation, and that was in August. And he did not come out of the operation. He never woke up out of it. And he died like a week later. But during this time, we got the scapula on him. Before the operation, he agreed to the sacraments. That's the miracle. And he was away from the sacraments virtually for 30 years. So he never really got, he was not a religious person. But he, in his own way, he prayed in his own way, you know, but he not like we do. Like we pray the rosary, like we have devotion to Our Lady, the sacraments, we receive communion. I don't think he virtually ever received communion either. Same thing. But he received the last rites before he died. He received a general absolution from the priest. He received the apostolic blessing. He received, we got the scapula on him before he died. The day he died, that morning, we got it on him. So that's the story. It's through Our Lady of the Roses that he's saved, because the circumstances are such that it would not have happened had the doors not opened. And the door, like I can remember, I was telling a lady that day he died, I don't know how we're going to pray a rosary. There's so many people here in the room. There was about 40 people, grandkids, family, friends. But I hear someone tell me, come on, we're going to pray the rosary. They came for me to tell me they're praying, they're going to pray the rosary. They want to pray the rosary. I didn't initiate it. They came to me. We said the rosary. We finished at like 5 of 3, and then we got the Pieta prayer book out, and we said the 3 beautiful prayers over a dying person. As soon as we finished those prayers, like a minute later, he died. Oh, like 3 o'clock. Now I'm mercy. So. No, that was my Uncle Joe. My Uncle Joe's another miracle, which I'll tell you maybe if I have time. Let me just get this in. I know Angela Aquia went around the grounds and asked people for help in raising money for Gregorian Masses. I just want to say that we did get the Masses. The priest informed us that they will be said from December 1st to December 30th for my father. So I want to thank you all. Latin, Tridentine, Gregorian Masses. Thank you. Just want to thank everyone for that. My Uncle Joe, my dad's brother, they were very, very close, my father and his uncle, and his brother Joe. I gave him a scapula, a brown scapula, and I told him, you wear this when you know you're going to die, because when you know you're going to die, put this on. Just put it on, please. And what happened was he put it on right there, and he wore it. I didn't think he was going to do it right away, but he wore it. He had stomach cancer. He died a month before my father, about 5 weeks before my father died. And he died on July 16th, Mount Carmel, Feast of Mount Carmel. And the thing about it that makes it special to me is I told him, when you die, give me a sign that everything's okay. And the sign is he died on July 16th, the day of Mount Carmel, the scapula. And that's what I think the sign is. I never in a million years would have thought would die on that day. And I want to just share with you two more things. The day my dad was buried, I went to the tomb. He has a regular gravestone, and I had the video camera. And on the back of the tomb, I saw this little caterpillar crawling across the tomb on the morning that he was going to be buried. And then I said, oh, what are you doing here, little fella? And I started talking with the caterpillar, and then he walked away. Well, not realizing, afterwards, about 2 or 3 weeks later, my godchild went to the cemetery off hours. It was closed. She climbed the fence, and she snuck in. She missed him so much, she went into the cemetery without anyone knowing. The grandkids loved my father. He had 20 grandkids. He just loved my father. But they still miss him deeply. But she went to the grave, and she was praying, and a butterfly hit her in the head. So you got the caterpillar, and you got the butterfly. And then it's a symbol of the resurrection, transformation, and it's a sign to her of his salvation. So I thought that was nice. And I just want to close with some quotes from the Blessed Mother on prayer, okay? And she says here that there, November 22nd, 75, she says, there is a balance in every man's life. This balance can be evened, my child, balanced by the prayers and acts of mercy of others. So she says also on June 13, 81, for those with great graces, they can be shared. You can share your graces. And she says here that many graces shall be gathered for those who are roaming in the darkness. One day you will all understand and be joyful in the knowledge that your sacrifice and your penance have saved many from the abyss. That's September 14, 76. She said in June 8, 74, graces in abundance shall be given through the visits to these sacred grounds chosen by the Father, graces for cure and conversion, graces for reclaiming the souls destined for the abyss. And then she said here that, ask and you shall receive, but many shall receive if others ask for them. That was 75, August 75. Well,
okay, well, thank you very much, John. And God rest the soul of Mr. Benavides, your Uncle Joseph, and Mr. William Morris. And yeah, fantastic stories. I mean, can you imagine? Mrs. Morris told me, for all intents and purposes, Mr. Morris was away from the church for 55 years. And she used to tell him once in a while, you can't nag, right? But once in a while, honey, if you don't go to church, that is a mortal sin. But you know, you do it maybe every once a year or once every 5 years. What are you going to do? You keep praying and hoping. And she was very, very clear on his final deathbed. She was so excited. She called me up and said that her husband agreed to, that he had his confession heard. And she was very clear. She said, if you know Mrs. Morris, she does have a strong personality. But one thing, she was very clear. I am not imposing my will, of forcing my husband. This has to be free-flowing and has to be the work of the Holy Spirit. And so she was, boy, was she thrilled that he did it on his own volition. The priest came to him, the chaplain making the rounds, do you want to have your confession heard? He agreed. And so there you go. He had his confession heard. He received communion a few times before he died. As John said, Latin investiture of the brown scapula. And Mrs. Morris was very devoted to Padre Pio her entire life. She's Italian herself. And her husband dies on the feast day of Padre Pio. And then one last note with Mr. Benavides and John. Countless times I spoke with John about his dad. And he was very discouraged. He said, I don't know how my dad is going to be saved, if you will. He's been away from the church for 3 decades, as you heard John. I mean, and as John said, I don't think this is really private, he had a little luggage that he was carrying all those years, had some, I guess, some few bad experiences when he was younger in the church. And if he wasn't a little bitter, he was indifferent to the church. And so John was very concerned, and rightfully so. And I tell you, I don't know how many times I said, John, I just stole from St. Ambrose. I just stole the words from St. Ambrose that he said to Monica. There's no way that a man of this many prayers and tears will be lost. With John's good work, giving up his life for the lay order of St. Michael, his mother, who's a very devoted Bayside devotee, and even many of his family members pray the rosary, you know, devoted. But I'm thinking particularly of John and his mother. There's just no way that Our Lady of the Roses is going to disappoint them. And sure enough, as you heard from John, so. Anyways, before we forget, don't forget, put it on your calendar. We're doing a pro-life bus in January. Pro-life bus in January, so mark that down, okay? Pardon? Absolutely, yeah. So we'll end it with that. That's a good point, John. As we said in our promo, hope-filled testimonials. Mrs. Morris said it. John just said it now. And that is the bottom line. There's always hope, no matter how bleak or impossible or hopeless the situation. John read some beautiful quotes from Our Lady. Beautiful. Graces can be shared. Ask, you can ask for someone else. Beautiful quotes there, John, from Our Lady of the Roses. It's true. It's true. And you've heard so many testimonials through the years. So don't lose hope with your loved ones and relatives that are away from the church or living sinful lives. It's going to work. It's going to work out for you. Okay, I don't want to keep you anymore. You've done enough purgatory. Okay. Okay, James is going to close with an Our Father, Hail Mary, and Glory Be.
And I'll just add one thing. All you good people, if you go to Mass daily, remember all your loved ones in the Masses also, not just your prayers, in the Masses. Very, very important. It could help save their souls when they're dying, especially the ones that are deep in mortal sin. They'll get the last rites and, you know, they'll be saved through your good efforts, and Our Lady will see to that.
If there was ever a time to dispel the darkness and keep heaven's message aglow, it is now, dear friends. And we depend on you because without your prayers and your financial assistance, this mission goes nowhere. So if you think this is a message that should continue to go out to the people, then send along your gift offerings today made payable to St. Michael's World Apostolate. And again, we do remind you that your donations are tax deductible. And of course, we invite you to write for the free messages and information. Send your letters to St. Michael's World Apostolate, P.O. Box 514, Bayside, New York, 11361, or toll-free line 1-800-345-MARY. That mailing address again for all the information, St. Michael's World Apostolate, P.O. Box 514, Bayside, New York, 11361, our website, www.smwa.org. And may Our Lady bless you.